In today's Eco Report feature, Norm Holey interviews David Larson about the effects of climate change on Big Bend National Park.
This is Norm Holey for WFHB, and today we are interviewing two people from the Big Bend National Park in Texas. We are interviewing David Larson, and he is the head of the management division, and then Joe Cernak, who is a biologist, park biologist. And I wonder if you'd start off just by describing the sort of the physical features of your national park.
Yeah, hi, this is Dave Larson, and we're located in West Texas and southeast of El Paso, driving time about 6 hours. We're right on the Mexico border, and we have a park that is 800,000 acres, and we manage a resource that ranges from 1,700 foot elevation up to almost 8,000 feet. And we find ourselves managing the northern reaches of the Chihuahuan Desert, and we have in there approximately three primary ecosystems that we're managing. And the main focus here in the park is looking at our lowland to mid-elevation deserts, including grasslands, and then it ranges up into a mountain area known as the Chisos Mountains, which is a montane forested ecosystem that actually is more relevant to Mexico, with yuccas and agaves and cactus and Arizona cypress and including Douglas fir and 14 species of oak trees. So we have a high diversity here in the park, and that's kind of where we're sitting at. We're right on the Rio Grande with Mexico, and we manage approximately 250 river miles of the Rio Grande with Mexico.
And since you've had your 100th year celebration and are looking forward to the future, I'm just wondering what issues do you see for the park going forward?
Climate change is definitely an issue, in that the Sky Island, where our forest occurs, a lot of the species that occur there are right at the edge of the range that they can grow anyway. We're sort of at they're pushing up against the limits of how much heat and dryness they can tolerate for a forest. So even small changes in climate for species that are already at their range can have grave consequences. And we had a drought event in 2011 that was also paired with the deep freeze that we had in winter 2011 that caused significant mortality of overstory trees in the forest. For example, the normal turnover of tree species, and mortality of tree species in a forest, should be 1-2% per year. And in some plots in the Chisos in 2011, we had 60% mortality of trees across all elevation gradients and across all species. So climate change is something that we're concerned about for the Chisos Mountains, particularly because that's where small changes in climate can have the largest effect.
Now, of course, most of Texas was very dry for some years, but this year there's been a great deal of precipitation in much of Texas. Have you gotten any of that this year, or are you still in the very dry parts?
No, we've had a very, very wet rainy season, which, of course, is always welcome. But I think we need to make clear, and I can't emphasize this too much, people have to separate the concepts of weather and climate. Weather is what happens with local circulation systems and local patterns in a short period of time. Climate is a longer time, larger scale interaction of all those air masses and masses of moist air. So I would look at one season or one particular weather event as just that, a weather event. It's how those things pile up on top of one another over years and decades that causes climate. So the weather this year has been great for resources. There's no evidence that the climate is getting any better for these imperiled forest resources.
So one example of that, too, is although we've had some good rains, the rains here actually came fairly late in the season. And we've even noticed in the field lately this year that our what you would call the health and production of the plants out in the field, even in the mountains, maybe was slowed down because of that late arrival of rain.
And other aspects of climate change that you're seeing there?
Yeah, one other big topic that we focus on is the Rio Grande and actually the flows, how much water we actually have in the system, and then how does that affect the fish that are in the river and even down into the macroinvertebrates that live in the stream. We see now, as some people have heard, that the river is classified as an imperiled system, meaning that the water has been over-allocated for other uses outside of recreational and environmental, priorities. Now, some of that's changing, but we are really dependent with Mexico because for a lot of the listeners, one of the primary water sources for the system in the park comes from the Conchos River. So we are heavily involved with managing shared resources with Mexico, trying to figure out how can we manage flows in the river for recreational and for ecosystem health. And Joe might have some more details about what that means for vegetation.
Yes, one of the projects we have going on with our Mexican colleagues is management of exotic plant species along the Rio Grande to try to maintain better wildlife habitat and greater recreational opportunities for boaters. That's a project we've been working on since 2008, and I think it's a good example of how the two nations and the two agencies, in this case National Park Service, and in Mexico, it's called CONAP, Comisión Nacional para Áreas Protegidas, and we work together on the resource management of the Rio Grande.
Do you have birds overwintering in your park?
Yeah, great question. You know, we have at least from an inventory standpoint, we have the highest count number for all species in all national parks in the U.S. So we're at about 452 bird species confirmed in this park. You know, half of those are accidental observations where, you know, being in the flyway for the Intermountain region of the U.S., we get a lot of birds coming through here, and a fairly famous location for watching birds. And we always promote our Christmas bird count in December, late December, because that's a good time to come here and see a lot of wintering sparrows and other populations of birds.
What other issues do you see in terms of your park going forward?
Well, as we highlighted, the real response is trying to figure out with climate change, how do we manage our forest ecosystem when fire has been suppressed for so long? We have a lot of big fuel buildups up in the high mountains. A lot of the plants up there, some of them actually are listed as threatened or endangered or soon to be listed. And how do you introduce fire again to make sure we don't lose the system up there with one big fire? So we're trying to assess, how can we use fire as a tool to manage the mountain systems, the forests up there? That's one issue in the future. Again, also trying to figure out how to manage water in the Rio Grande with so many different players and trying to maintain that ecosystem health there. And then, again, this park, although it's very hard to get here, and our usual visitor when they do get here is going to stay here 2 to 3 days. Visitation, just like a lot of areas, we have some focused areas that people love to visit with waterfalls and hikes up in the mountains. And some of those areas are getting use levels now that we'll have to assess in the future about how to manage visitor use while also protecting the natural and cultural resources.
Today I've been talking with David Larson and Joe Cyrenac of Big Bend National Park in Texas. Thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you.
Thanks, Norm.